The question this hour is, why do tens of millions of voters choose not to vote? And what if they did? It is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. We're spending the hour getting a more complete picture of the nearly 100 million eligible Americans who did not cast a vote in the 2016 presidential election. The nonpartisan Knight Foundation set out to find out who these voters were and why they declined to participate in the process. Do you vote in most elections? Do you feel like your vote makes a difference? Do you routinely sit out elections? Do you feel like your vote doesn't matter? Share your insights, 800-642-1234. Yvette Alexander is Director of Learning and Impact at the Knight Foundation. The report is called The 100 Million Project, The Untold Story of American Non-Voters. Yvette, welcome to the Ideas Network. Yvette, can you hear us?
Hi, thank you for having me.
Yeah.
Now I can, yeah.
Why is it important to know what non-voters think?
Well, I think it's,
I think we're having some technical issues. Yeah. We're having some technical issues in hearing you, Yvette. It's fading in and out here. We're going to get you on the phone. And meanwhile, we are talking about a report. It was released earlier this year called The 100 Million Project, The Untold Story of American Non-Voters. And this study surveyed 12,000 chronic non-voters nationally and in 10 swing states, soliciting their views, their attitudes, behaviors on a wide range of topics. And I'm wondering, Yvette, are you there now? Nope. And there we go. Are you there, Yvette? Nope. We're still not having her. So we're looking at what non-voters think and why they do what they do. It was surprising in this study I found that in swing states reporting significantly lower interest in politics than non-voters nationwide. Yvette, are you there?
Yes. Hear me now, Kate?
I can. Thanks. Sorry for the technical difficulties. Why do you think it is important to get a handle on what non-voters think?
It's a good question, and one that plagues us at the Knight Foundation. We noticed, coming off of the last election, that a lot of the polls that we see today, when you get, polls are taking the temperature of how Americans are feeling on a lot of issues, they intentionally usually look only at likely voters. So respondents are put through a battery that weeds out non-voters because voters are seen as the ones who influence elections. But with, as you said, almost 100 million not participating in 2016, actually the non-participation of a lot of eligible voters also obviously influences the election. So we decided to do a deeper dive because this is a mostly unexplored segment of the electorate, to see kind of how they are feeling about the election system itself, about issues around voting and politics, and feeling about, the upcoming election this year.
One voter in Milwaukee in particular who caught our attention told the researchers for your study that when she spent time learning about the candidates, she found, quote, "All the options suck. I don't feel like one is great, so I'm not going to vote at all." Is that a common thread?
Yes, it definitely is. When we asked directly in the survey why these chronic non-voters don't vote, the top reason given was that they don't like the candidates. That was 17% of non-voters. Others don't know the candidates or the issues. That was 13%. And then another, 12% just simply feel that their vote doesn't matter for various reasons.
Do their responses differ based on their age or their race, their income?
Yes, it's true that the responses do differ, as does the demographics of non-voters in general. So just backing up a minute and comparing non-voters to what we would call active voters, or those who tend to vote frequently or consistently in national elections, midterms, and presidentials, those active voters tend to be more college educated. They tend to, and by virtue of that, they also tend to be whiter. They tend to be higher income. And so when you look at the non-voting population, it definitely skews towards minorities, those without a college education, and those of lower income. So those are the voices that are less represented right now in politics.
We're talking with Yvette Alexander, Director of Learning and Impact at the Knight Foundation, and they set out to get an answer to the question, why do so many people choose not to vote? It's a study that came out earlier this year, and you can join in with your questions about non-voters, 800-642-1234. There is the word chronic that comes up a lot in your study. How did the Knight Foundation define a chronic non-voter?
So these were non-voters who had a demonstrated pattern of non-voting. I believe that it was one, they could have voted in one or less of the last six national elections. So that means that they, you know, mostly are not voting, perhaps participating once every six elections or something like that. So we wanted to make allowances. And then the active voters we looked at were those who were consistently participating. So we were able to compare these two groups. We surveyed 12,000 chronic non-voters nationwide. So they're a little bit more, they're a subset of the 100 million, the almost 100 million that didn't show up to the polls in 2016. They're really the very disengaged. And so we thought we could learn a lot about non-voting overall by looking at this particular subset of very disengaged non-voters. We also surveyed active voters. And so we have some really interesting comparisons between those two groups. So, you know, we know it's very difficult in political science to understand why people don't vote. So we learned a little bit about why people don't vote by asking them directly why they don't vote. And as we were talking earlier, they don't like the candidates. They don't often know the candidates. They feel their vote doesn't matter. But we also learned a little bit what might be underneath the disengagement by comparing them to active voters. And when we did that, a few things really stood out that that were true regardless of socioeconomics, regardless of demographics, and, you know, which definitely impacts someone's likelihood to vote. So those, a couple things that stood out to us were that many non-voters suffer from a lack of faith in the election system in general, much more so than active voters. And they have serious doubts about the impact of their own votes. They don't really feel that decisions made by the president or others in Washington have a very strong impact on their lives. The other thing that stood out to us were that non-voters were much less engaged with news and information and on politics in general, and that they're left feeling underinformed when it comes election time.
So what does it mean for our democracy then if these non-voters don't trust the system?
I think it has serious ramifications on our democracy. We believe that their non-participation is actually a key feature of our democracy and raises important questions about the basic health of a participatory society, particularly as the disengaged non-voting population doesn't mirror exactly the active voters. So you have certain demographics, you know, more represented in our elected officials and their politics than you do others.
And, you know, where is the lack of faith? Is it in corruption? Is it in the money? What in particular leads to this distrust?
That's a really good question. We dove into a lot of that. So I can talk about non-voters in general, and I can also talk about non-voters in Wisconsin, if that's of interest. So overall, when we asked about their faith in the election system, 38% of non-voters nationally were not confident that elections represent the will of the people. That's a lot. That's a large proportion, right? 38% don't believe that the basic system works. And they were also more likely to say that it's because the system is kind of rigged or corrupt in general.
Well, let's pause there as we talk about the study by the Knight Foundation exploring reasons why non-voters don't cast a ballot. We have analysis from Yvette Alexander, who directs Learning and Impact at the Knight Foundation. Taking your questions, have you tried to convince family and friends to vote? What arguments have you made? 800-642-1234. Back in a minute on the Ideas Network. If you're just joining us, we're talking about a national study of the non-voting electorate in the U.S., nearly 100 million Americans in 2016. We're exploring the nuance of the disengagement in the political process, what the future might hold for these non-voters in the upcoming November election that's 15 weeks away. What do you think causes people not to vote? Is it lack of faith in the system, as we've been talking about? What changes would you suggest and how elections are run to yield higher voter participation. Be part of this 800-642-1234. Yvette Alexander is Director of Learning and Impact at the Knight Foundation, which produced the report on non-voters. Yvette, as we were discussing there, and you're looking at where the breakdown is in why people don't trust the system, almost 2 in 5 saying that the system is rigged. What do you mean by that?
So we asked an open-ended question of, why aren't you confident that the results of the election represents the will of the people if the folks that we surveyed said that they didn't think so. And so people were, a lot of the non-voters replied in a way that was categorized into generally the system feeling corrupt or rigged in some ways without a lot of specificity around it. That was the most common answer that we got back from non-voters about why they don't trust in the election system. The second most common reason was the existence of the Electoral College, which is a little bit of a confusing concept, I think, to a lot of non-voters, or if not confusing, feels in some ways to be corrupt or to favor certain aspects of the population and the electorate over others. So the Electoral College, or the fact that the popular vote doesn't elect the president, which we've had examples of in recent years, more common examples than we have in our long history as a country. So that's kind of fresh in folks' minds. Then another 20% cited the influence of big money or campaign financing on our politics. And others trailed off with some other, concerns. I'll just say that in Wisconsin, I have some Wisconsin data here for listeners that, 38% of Wisconsinite non-voters were not confident in the election system. So that's a pretty, like I said, sizable number. 45% of those 45% were confident, but only 16% were very confident. And the issues that they cited most was the Electoral College. 27% of them had issues with the existence of the Electoral College and its role in our election system. It's a much higher percent than non-voters overall, and they look a little bit more like active voters in terms of their concerns.
Matt from Wausau emailed us, and Matt wonders about how gerrymandering or redistricting issues might make voters feel like their vote is worthless.
I think it certainly factors into how some folks think about the impact of their vote or whether their vote has an impact or not, the existence of gerrymandering. However, political terms like that were not often cited by non-voters. These kind of chronic non-voters really, most of them tend to be removed from political news and information in general. And so they're much more likely to have kind of a general sense of things being rigged versus citing specific examples like that.
Yvette Alexander is Director of Learning and Impact at the Knight Foundation, and the study surveyed 12,000 chronic non-voters nationally and in 10 swing states, looking at their views and attitudes and behaviors on a range of topics. Let's take a call now. Saeed is in Green Bay. Hi, Saeed.
Yes, good morning, and thank you for taking my call. And what an interesting study. I have two questions. One is, of the variables that you mentioned that predicts non-voting behavior, are all of them independent predictors? If you were to control for socioeconomic status, would the other things that you said, like education and race, be independent predictors of non-voting behavior? That's my first question. My second question is, for people who don't exercise their vote, obviously their vote has no value to them because they don't exercise it. And any economic theory would say that an individual would be willing to exchange a thing of no value for a thing of value. So how susceptible is this population to actually selling their vote?
Saeed, thank you for that. Yvette, can you go 1-2 there?
Sure. I'll take the first one. So the question, can you repeat the first part of your question again, Saeed?
The first part was, I was wondering if the parameters of race, education, and other things that you mentioned that are independent, or if we control for socioeconomic class, would those not be non-predictors?
Sure. So there are lots of studies on this by political scientists that delve into demographics and voting predictive variables. I'm not so familiar with all of them, but we had some amazing political science advisors on this study who've informed us that race and, you know, obviously college education is a huge predictor of voting behavior, which we found in our study, but previous studies have found that it's been well established, so there's nothing new there. When we looked at when political scientists in general, my understanding is when they look at those two variables, that once you control for college education, race becomes a non-predictor. So, for example, minorities are less likely to vote. However, college-educated minorities are more likely to vote than their white counterparts. So that would be the first part of that. And a lot of what we looked at controlled for demographics. So we already know some of the demographic predictors of voting, some of which we've covered. But we were interested in what was beyond that. And the two things that stood out to us were, controlling for demographics, including college education, including income, which was another big predictor. We saw that those who said that they had a lower faith in the election system were less likely to vote across demographics, and also those who had a lower engagement with news and information in general, as determined by a few variables that we have.
So, go ahead. Uh huh. Yep.
I was just going to address the second side of his vote. I would just push back on the idea that a lot of these non-voters feel that their vote has no value. I think the existence or the possibility of voting has value to them. However, in our world, there's a lot of trade-offs happening. From what we were hearing from interviews, a lot of people aren't. Some people are making a conscious decision not to vote, but a lot of people are just getting caught up with other priorities in life and deprioritizing voting. So I think that the option to vote has value for a lot of people. The other thing that we heard that I think maybe relates to this question is the idea that others might know more about voting and politics and be better informed. So this came up again and again in our interviews, particularly I would say with women, where the non-voters felt like they weren't educated enough or informed enough on politics to make an informed decision. And so they were happy to rely on others to make a decision for them.
Where do non-voters tend to get their news from?
That's a very good question, and one that we're interested in a lot at Knight Foundation, because Knight Foundation believes that, you know, the role of information in society and in democracy is very important. So we definitely wanted to delve into that. Non-voters overall engage less with news and political information. They're twice as likely as active voters to passively encounter news versus actively seeking out. So we ask them, you know, if they're intentional about their news sources, and they were less likely to be so, and more likely to say that they tend to bump into information about politics and candidates kind of in the course of their daily life, whether that's because something comes across their social media feed or, a water cooler conversation or a family member brings something up. So they were much less likely to be, seeking out political information than active voters. And, you know, they also say when come election time that they a lot of them don't feel they have enough information about candidates and issues to decide who to vote for. Their media diets, as reported to us, self-reported, involve less news and more entertainment as compared to a lot of active voters. And, you know, a lot of that does fall along the lines of college education as well. There's a big component of influence there.
Let's bring in Mike in Minocqua. Hi, Mike.
Hi, how you doing? I'm enjoying the conversation. I always thought that it was something nurturing or familial or environmental about it, because my folks and my wife's folks always voted and they kept up with the news and discussed things at home. And I noticed that with my kids too, that they all vote. So I don't know. I know it's hard to separate out, and it's a little bit like what the last person asked, but it seems I always thought that that had a lot to do with it. It's not heredity as much as nurturing or environmental. I just wanted to know what you thought of that.
That's a good question. We're going to keep that on ice here with Yvette Alexander from the Knight Foundation. They produced a report earlier this year called the 100 Million Project, seeking to put a face on the non-voting population in America. Do you vote in some elections or all? Maybe you haven't cast a ballot in years. What's behind your decision? Do you feel that your elected officials represent your interests? What issues do you think are ignored? Join in 800-642-1234. We'll be back after this news update with Yvette Alexander right here on the Ideas Network. You're with us as we spend the hour on Hard to Reach Voters. It is the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. 4 years ago, 43% of eligible voters did not cast a ballot in the presidential election. And a report by the Knight Foundation sought to ask why. Who are these nearly 100 million Americans who are not participating? Only slightly more than half of all eligible voters cast their ballots in presidential elections. Do you think your vote matters? Are you worried about election interference? What would instill more faith in our system? Join in at any point, 800-642-1234. Yvette Alexander is Director of Learning and Impact at the Knight Foundation, and she stays with us. Yvette, we were talking there with Mike in Minocqua, who wonders how the voters' family values, their environment, how they see the system of voting growing up, might that have any likelihood on them becoming non-voters in the future?
Hi, yeah, I really appreciate the caller's question. And I think he mentioned news as well. And we definitely have a question that gets at the heart of that. And, you know, I think the answer is in general is yes. There's a lot of environmental factors that, you know, we're not born with a value of voting or the knowledge of how to do it. These are things that are socialized, with us as we grow up. We're socialized to value voting. We're socialized to understand how to do it or to feel confident doing it. There are a lot of aspects like that, which are very hard, I think, to get at from a research perspective. But certainly we know from previous studies that Americans who come from families with a long history of voting are more likely to vote themselves. Political science studies have borne out time and time again the impact of networks on voting. So if you if a lot of your friends and family members vote, you're much more likely to vote yourself. So there's definitely a lot of issues like that going on. One of the things we asked about in the study was we asked respondents to think back to when they were growing up and how much was getting and discussing news a part of your family life. And there was a very large gap between voters and non-voters on that question with, 36% of active voters saying that discussing news as a part of family life, they did that a lot in their family of origin, versus only 29% of non-voters. So of a lot of the variables we looked at in the study, that was a very large gap.
Like a learned behavior.
Exactly. The idea, the behavior of seeking out news and information and discussing it and thinking about it, that's a learned behavior. Sometimes we learn that in college or in our studies, but mostly we learn that in our family of origin.
We've seen states passing voter ID laws, restricting hours, polling locations for voting. Lisa from Heartland couldn't stay with us. Lisa wanted to know how the convenience of voting affects people wanting to vote or not. Do non-voters find the process of voting difficult or complicated?
It's a good question, and I think on the top of everyone's mind today with COVID, and this data was pre-COVID, so I think there's a lot of process questions and ease of voting questions more now on the table than there even was before. But we did ask about the process of voting. We said, do you believe the actual process of voting is easy or difficult in your state? And And actually, the most common response from non-voters was that it was very easy. 46% said that voting was very easy in their state. Another 30% said it was somewhat easy. So at least in what they're reporting to us, they find the process of voting easy. Now, that starts to differ a lot by demographics. Particularly young people that we surveyed were the most likely to say that the process of voting was not easy to them. It does, one would argue, involve some more, some more tactile forms of engaging with information or going to a poll. Like, a lot of young people are used to doing things digitally and online, and a lot of them were citing, you know, why can't I vote online? And if I could vote online, I might be more likely to vote. So I think, you know, the digital divide, which we often talk about in terms of who's not digitally savvy enough to engage, it does cut both ways. So I think, you know, asking young people to do remote ballots or put a stamp on something tends to put some more barriers in their way than it would an older voter. And voters themselves think the process is quite easy. In Wisconsin, it was even higher in terms of more non-voters in Wisconsin saying that it was very easy or somewhat easy to vote in the state.
Let's take another call now. Ryan is with us from DeSoto. Hi, Ryan.
Hi, good morning. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
So I would have been one of the voters that didn't vote in the last election. And the reason I did is because, or I didn't, is because I felt like there were no good choices. I mean, you had Hillary Clinton with Benghazi, which was a huge blow up, and then you had Trump with bankruptcies in his past. I feel like big money, because it's supposed to be a multi-party system, and I feel like big money drowns out other parties, because the Republican and Democratic parties are such powerhouses in collecting money, and I just feel like the other parties get drowned out.
Would you vote in November?
In this case, yes. I'm actually going to vote in November. I tend to vote more on policy than person itself and backgrounds. You know, I do a lot of research when I look into candidates, and I mean, for me, the last 4 years have been just disgusting.
Well, Ryan, I want to pause here and get a response from Yvette. You know, here is someone who didn't vote last time because the candidates didn't, there wasn't an option.
Yes, and that was the most common cited reason why non-voters nationwide say they're not voting, was they don't like the candidates. I also heard him mention the two-party system. 7% of non-voters, that was their primary reason, is the two-party system and not liking it or feeling like it wasn't good for our country or prevented them from voting for the types of candidates that they would like to see. Definitely a type of answer that probably came from more college-educated non-voting set. I would say that another thing that related to what he was talking about was, we asked, you know, we asked non-voters what could motivate them to vote. And this is a tricky question to unpack because, we know from previous studies that, you know, what people say would motivate them to vote isn't necessarily what will, because a lot of times, those factors come on the table and people still aren't voting. It's very complex, the phenomenon of participation. When we asked what could motivate you to vote, when we asked that in Wisconsin, 25%, so a quarter of the Wisconsin chronic non-voters said that they would vote if there was a candidate that they believed in. 10% wanted to see a particular issue addressed. So it sounded like that was one of the concerns of the caller, was looking at a particular policy or issue that they would like to see on the table. For young people, for example, a lot of young people wanted to see more environmental policies on the table, gun control policies, things like that, issues that weren't necessarily front and center of the platforms that they were hearing about.
When you say young people, is that like 18 to 24-year-olds? Is it that set?
That's correct. So in addition to studying these chronic non-voters with patterns of non-voting and active voters with patterns of voting, we also studied 18 to 24-year-olds who were eligible to vote but didn't necessarily fall into a pattern yet because they haven't been eligible for very many elections. So they very much interested us because in a lot of ways they looked more disengaged from our political system and more disinterested and, you know, jaded about politics than even non-voters themselves. And in other ways, they, you know, had some clear, I think, calls for what they would like to see different, both in terms of like the voting process and the issues that, they would like to see on the table. The issues that they cared about tended to diverge quite considerably from the issues that non-voters and voters cared about that were older than them.
We're talking with Yvette Alexander, Director of Learning and Impact at the Knight Foundation, which set out to try to answer the question, why do so many people not vote? Let's take a call now. Steve is with us in Ironwood. Hi, Steve.
Hi, how you doing?
Doing well.
Okay. My question kind of, they talked about it before. It seems to me a few years ago, Gore won the popular vote for president, but Bush won the electoral vote. Question one, the electoral vote is the same day as the popular vote? If so, how could they possibly know who the popular vote is for? And question two, or statement two, that's probably why a lot of people don't vote, because their vote doesn't count.
Steve, thank you for that. Yvette, back to the Electoral College and that system not working for this particular voter.
Yeah, I think a lot of non-voters share that sentiment, and voters as well. I'll say active voters also took issue with the Electoral College, but there's something that still motivates them to vote. So, you know, when we looked at this in Wisconsin in particular, you know, the issue, 27% shared the Steve's issue that the Electoral College, you know, either, you know, made them not want to vote or created confusion around it. And, you know, that was a big deal in Wisconsin, and I know for a lot of voters nationwide.
So is that lack of interest for young people, is that typical of every generation, or is this a new phenomenon?
Yeah, that's a very interesting question and one that a good one that I've got a lot regarding the study. And we don't have any specific like data analytics on that, but I can say that in general, we know that political participation has tended to be low amongst young people. You know, historically, they're less engaged in the political system in general and less likely to vote. However, today, there seems to be emerging some of the habits and attitudes that we looked at in this study, attitudes about trust in the election system, behaviors related to news and information. Some of the young people are diverging further and further, and they're looking more like non-voters than voters today.
We have the Knight Foundation's Yvette Alexander breaking down their study on why millions of Americans do not vote. And we'll be back in a minute with Yvette Alexander right here on the Ideas Network. It's the morning show. I'm Kate Archer Kent. We're spending the hour probing the question of why Americans don't vote. In 2016, nearly 100 million eligible voters did not cast a ballot in the general election. A study by the Knight Foundation sought to learn what keeps these voters away. According to their findings that were released earlier this year, there is not a one-size-fits-all description of the non-voting population, but nearly 2 in 5 of the survey respondents are not confident that elections represent the will of the people. Yvette Alexander from the Knight Foundation stays with us to explain the study findings. Let's bring in another question now from Carol in Milwaukee. Good morning, Carol.
Yes, good morning. I think that a lot of the poor people don't vote because they see that nothing is being done for them and that it's so-called doesn't work, which it doesn't, for them, but the reason it doesn't is because they haven't voted in the past, and what they need to know is for the future, if they start voting as a group, they can hold the leaders' feet to the fire, and also local representatives' feet to the fire about police and about all sorts of things which affect poor people more than the rich people who do vote.
Well, Carol, thank you. Let's pose that to Yvette. Will voting bring change?
I think change is slow. But I think theoretically, I agree with Carol that the more folks we have participating in the system that can represent the particular interests and concerns of their particular communities. We know that, like I mentioned before, a lot of these chronic non-voters, as a whole, they don't look exactly like the active voters, right? Active voters tend to be older Americans. They tend to be more college educated. They tend to be higher income. You know, on a whole, these are, small differences, but added up cumulatively make a big change because they're represented more particularly in our local politics, which wasn't the focus of this study. But we kind of see, voting in the presidential election as kind of the gateway, if you will, to voting in local elections. Because I agree with Carol that a lot of the issues that Americans face in general, particularly Americans from vulnerable communities, is addressed at a local level. And so hopefully, getting engaged in politics and starting that habit and the learned behaviors around participation, staying informed. If they're doing that at the presidential level, they're more likely to do it at the local level. At least that's what we see in the data. And so I would encourage anyone who's, trying to motivate votes at the local level as a result of some current events, those definitely go hand in hand.
There's this belief that mobilizing non-voters to participate would shift American politics to the left. In the participants to the study that you looked at, would that bear out?
Yeah, it's a very interesting question. It's a long-held belief that if everyone were to come out to vote, that it would shift things to the left, as you mentioned. And, again, the non-voters that we looked at in our study are chronic non-voters. So it's not the whole set of people who just, didn't make it out in 2016, but a subset of them. And what we found was they were actually a lot more divided in terms of their political ideologies and their, their favorability in regards to President Trump than active voters or the electorate and active voters and those who are voting in general. So non-voters, for example, showed slightly more support for constructing the wall along the Mexican border than active voters, but they're less supportive of replacing the Affordable Care Act. So sometimes they have a mix of politics that they're interested in. And, what we looked at was perhaps there was a very slight edge to a Democratic candidate when we asked who they would vote for in 2020 if they voted. There would be a slight edge to the Democratic candidate, in terms of overall votes from non-voters, these chronic non-voters. But when we looked at the battleground states and how it would impact the Electoral College, it was very close indeed, perhaps with favor going to the president.
We're talking with Yvette Alexander about the Knight Foundation study that surveyed 12,000 chronic non-voters nationally. Let's take another call now. Joy is with us from West Bend. Hi, Joy.
Hi. I just wanted to comment that I am a faithful voter, college educated and everything, but my skepticism of whether it really makes any difference besides the Electoral College and the two-party system seems like it's rigged. I'm concerned about the vote count being hacked into. I have heard on public radio, and I've seen articles that confirm this, that the vote count can be hacked into without any traceable way to trace it. And it just would need to be changed a little bit here, a little bit there. I really believe that in the presidential election in 2016, it could have happened. I was really pleased when Jill Stein challenged the vote from Wisconsin. But I think that until we have more confirmation that the voter count is safe, I just can't believe that my vote really matters.
Joy, thanks. Yvette, election integrity and voter interference here.
Sure. So we did ask about this in the study as well. And, I heard that the caller was a voter, and you know, some of the active voters, the consistent and faithful voters we studied, also shared a lack of confidence that votes were tallied accurately. Of course, other motivators keep them voting, and so, you know, thank you to the caller and others for continuing to vote despite any doubts. But it looks like, you know, of active voters, 15% were not very confident that the results of the elections were counted fully or reported accurately. And 6% were not confident at all, even among people who actually vote. Amongst non-voters, you know, the doubt goes up. So 21% of non-voters were very confident, 38% somewhat confident that the results of the elections were counted fully and reported accurately. Active voters tended to be more confident, but as the caller demonstrates, there are still doubts. And I think what this points to is, you know, I think in general in society, there's a desire now with more data and analytics available for more transparency around vote tallying, particularly if the process becomes more electronic, more digitized, things like that. I come from the state of Florida, so we're kind of plagued by headlines related to vote counting. And so I can sympathize with some of that concern. However, what we do know from studies is that, you know, the vote counts are more accurate than, you know, what the headlines would suggest, because we see headlines when things don't work, not when they work.
We're almost out of time, but it was so surprising that non-voters in swing state report significantly lower interest in politics than non-voters nationwide. And your study found political interest was lowest in Wisconsin and Michigan. What did you see there?
Yeah, it's true. We did see those numbers. I'm not sure exactly what's behind it. We didn't ask follow-ups on why, but I know from other political studies that in states where politics can be negatively charged, battleground states where they're bombarded with a lot of negative campaign ads, where family and friend conversations around politics can be very contentious, we do see interest in politics going down. So I'm not sure if that's what's happening in Wisconsin. But something else I noticed about the Wisconsin non-voters is that they're consuming more news and information around politics. And so, you know, there's definitely more engagement in the political kind of arena. And so perhaps, you know, if some of the other barriers were removed or there was more incentive, that we would see a higher turnout.
Yeah, so it wasn't the news and information, it was other issues in Wisconsin.
Yeah, that's correct. We saw, for example, that they're consuming more news than chronic non-voters nationwide by a large margin. They're more likely to be actively seeking it out. However, they trust it a little bit less. So, you know, come election time, they're still... they're still feeling informed and kind of similar rates. But yeah, I think that they're paying attention to the information that's coming out. And so perhaps we'll see some good turnout in November.
Yvette, thank you for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me. It was a pleasure.
Yvette Alexander is Director of Learning and Impact at the Knight Foundation. We have a link, by the way, to the 100 Million Project study on our website. It's at WPR.org/mornings. Just ahead, it is On Point. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. This is The Morning Show, and you're listening to the Ideas Network.